Eoch tanuyap, kuige iwans kuyens na. Hi everybody, my name is kuige iwans. I'm a member of the Squamish Nation and the Yagalanis clan of the Haida Nation. You're listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. We live, work, play, and broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
To Each for All, the Cooperative Connection on Vancouver Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM and online at cooperadio.org. I'm Sandy Goldman. For me, the best thing about co-ops is Principle 7, Concern for Community. I think it's the best of what we do as cooperators. In Saskatchewan, the Moose Jaw Co-op has been giving back for 80 years. I spoke to Michaela Turner, Manager of Community and Employee Engagement, to find out more. I began by asking her how the co-op decides which causes to support. Here's our discussion.
My role is developing relationships and working with people in our communities. Moose Jaw Co-op touches not only the Moose Jaw community, but we also have a reach up to some rural areas. So Liberty, Saskatchewan and Avonlea, Saskatchewan both have locations for us. So getting to know the people in those areas, getting to know and work with the nonprofits and the charities in all three areas and surrounding, as well as being strategic and innovative about what we're doing with our donations, being smart about it. Our co-op has really grown the past number of years. And when I started in this role almost 6 years ago, it was brand new for our co-op. So we've really tried to evolve it and learn how to be strategic with our giving and what we're doing and spending our members' money wisely. But my role is really about those relationships and building those strong partnerships to make our community stronger and richer and better for everybody. That's our goal.
And you have something called a Concern for Community Fund. Is that what you're managing when you talk about donations being made by the co-op?
Yeah, it's called the Caring for the Community Fund. It's a separate program that we offer at our Moose Jaw Co-op. So we do an application process and we do two reviews of it a year. So a fall intake with a deadline for the fall and one for the spring. And that is anything over and above $10,000. So bigger projects, more meaningful impacts, more legacy giving. And that is reviewed, prepared by me and taken to our member relations board of directors. So that goes directly to our board for review to decide what we do or we don't do, what we can commit to. And the funding for that comes as a separate fund, different from my regular giving budget. So it's 1.5% of our bottom line profits each year. So it's big. And we really try to do those legacy projects. And recent one that we're very excited about is the Harvest Pantry that we created in partnership with our Moose Jaw Food Bank. And that's $90,000 that we just gave over the next 3 years as the naming rights and partnership to a new food hub in our community. So just looking for some of those bigger projects, people can apply. It's also when I'm talking to people and hear something that I might say, oh, that would be something really good that we could maybe help you with from Caring for the Community. If you want to put in the details and apply, we can review it. So I'm always kind of keeping an ear out for how we can help in our communities and how we can best support, because Moose Jaw Co-op is all about people first. We care about the people in our community. And these groups are doing such great work, and it's needed, right? We know the need is great. So we're really proud to be able to offer a supporting hand when we can.
Tell me about some of the challenges being faced by the communities that you serve right now.
I mean, there's a few things, I think. Maybe some challenges in our city would be the homelessness, right? And the social services aspect of things, I think, is affecting everybody right now. We have a lack of affordable housing. So those are things that we have tried to support. The food insecurity, of course, that goes along, not only just, you know, home security and homelessness, being housing secure, but also food secure. So there's two different things in that, because they affect people differently.
The Harvest Pantry, this is a new concept for the Moose Jaw Food Bank. And as you say, you've joined together, you're funding it to the tune of $30,000 a year for the next few years, and it's taking a different approach. Tell us a bit about what's different about going forward with this project.
So we really recognize that food insecurity is a big challenge currently in our communities. The Moose Jaw and District Food Bank supports people in Moose Jaw and the surrounding area can all come. But the Harvest Pantry is something that we've helped to create and name very proudly as a shopping model. So they can, the people using the service can shop with dignity. So it's set up to be more like our food store, a grocery store with open shelves, and they go pick what they want from all the different shelves and coolers, just like a regular little grocery store. And they check out, they weigh out, and they are good to go. So it really just provides a way to offer food support, but shopping with dignity and giving some people some hope that this is a little bit more of a normal approach to having to ask for help, because that's a hard thing, and that they shouldn't be embarrassed about it. They're not going to the food bank. They're going to the Harvest Pantry, and it's bright and it's new and it's set up like a store. It's got everything beautifully done in it, and you know, just simple touches like playing music in the background for some calming presence while they're there, because they're struggling and they're stressed out, and we want this to be kind of a safe spot for giving some dignity back to them and giving a lending hand to help when needed, but to provide some hope for them as well. The food bank offers all kinds of not just food resources, but supports in terms of connecting people with jobs and getting their identification and all those types of things. They do all kinds of great work. So providing these funds to them and making this project a reality is huge. From what I've heard, it's only the second one in our province. Regina just opened one a few months ago, and ours was to follow. So it's quite exciting. It's very big for our Moose Jaw Co-op, and we're really proud of this. We're really proud.
It sounds like a model that we talked about here a few weeks ago during our provincial election, where instead of being given a hamper or a box of food at the food bank, you're That's shopping, right. Trying to normalize the experience, and as you say, give hope and dignity to people in the community. This is really very, very big and very significant. You know, the funds for this, where do they come from? The donations that Moose Jaw Co-op makes or other FCL co-ops, where do they come from in the whole scheme of your budget? Because we know that caring for the community is so important to the co-ops. It's a cooperative principle, but also the FCL co-ops really give back a lot through all kinds of, for all kinds of programs. One of them we followed for years is the you know, creating spaces like recreation facilities or gardens,
community spaces.
Community spaces. That's a great one.
Where
do they come from in your bottom line, these funds that you put forward, put back into making your community stronger?
Yeah, so all of our profits stay here local, right? They're not being shipped off to a head office in some large city outside of our province. They are staying right here in our communities. So the more that our members support us and shop with us, for Moose Jaw Co-op, we not only have food and fuel and pharmacy, we also have ag sectors and in all of our areas, we have home and building supplies. So it's big. So when people understand how a co-op works, that their money does stay local here, that's what creates my budget so that I can give. And that's what creates that 1.5% of our bottom line towards the Caring for the Community Fund. So the more that people shop here, the more that we can support and give back locally to the communities that matter. And it's just all full circle staying right here within us.
Do you find that people understand that? I mean, one of the biggest challenges of co-ops over the years, and it's a persistent perennial challenge,
yes,
is understanding the value of co-ops and
yeah.
how they work. And you're gritting your teeth there, but I think you really get it.
Yes.
Awareness of the co-op model. What do you find in your community about that? Because it's such a great model in the way that
yeah.
it's able to keep funds local and support
sure.
local. Do people get that, or do you do things to help raise awareness of the co-op model?
We're always talking about it. I think every co-op has that challenge of bringing that awareness and constantly talking about it. Explaining equity and cashback isn't the simplest thing to do, but we try to, you know, continually talk about that. And we try to have a very physical presence in our communities so that people see us and know that, yes, Moose Jaw Co-op has given to this. The more support we can get from our members helps us to grow as a business, and that will grow our continuation of giving back. And like you said, that's in our policies, that's in our mandates, that's what we do, that's not changing ever. So yes, we have grown our physical presence of telling the stories is a big role of mine, of telling the stories, sharing it, making it known of what we're actually doing and behind the scenes, what that looks like. Because then I think people will understand, I think they get it. And once they do, they're very loyal. They're very, very loyal.
Is your membership growing over the years? Are you getting an influx of immigrants to your community and area, or sort of how do you kind of keep it going?
Yeah, that's a great question. Our membership continues to grow bit by bit. Of course, when we amalgamate and take on smaller co-ops, that does bring people to us as one Moose Jaw co-op. So we have had two recent amalgamations in the last several years with both Avonlea, which was Genesis Co-op, and Liberty Co-op. So those are now part of us. So that does grow our membership. But then locally within the communities, yeah, we do have you know, constant membership growth each month. We do track that. But with our city of Moose Jaw, it's our population stays around that 33,000 points. So we really are looking to help the city grow economy so that we can bring some new things to our city to really help grow, because that will only help our business. And then again, turns back to the giving in our community.
What is Moose Jaw known for in terms of industry or agriculture? Tell us a bit about, you know, your community. The name always grabs
me. So people usually relate Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan to Al Capone and the tunnels of Moose Jaw, maybe.
Right.
We're in southwest Saskatchewan. We have about 33,000 people here. We're a small town friendly city. We have a beautiful downtown area that is historic in charm, and of course known for those tunnels, made us famous for sure, as well as other tourist attractions such as the Temple Gardens Mineral Spa. Agricultural is big here, and agribusiness, as well as potash and natural resource mining we have here. So And again, the tourism has grown and bounced back since COVID, fortunately, with some of those key namesake places. So it is a great community. We are a small town feel with some of the bigger amenities. It's a great little place. It's bringing lots of people home to Moose Jaw to raise families. It's a great community feel. Everybody kind of knows everybody or is connected somehow. And yeah, a vibrant little city for sure.
Tell us a bit about those Al Capone tunnels in a nutshell. Oh.
In a nutshell, Al Capone spent lots of time here in Moose Jaw back in the day. There was lots going on during the Prohibition times, and we are a main roadway railway with the CP Rail passing right through us. So that's why Al Capone came down from Chicago all the way on the train to Moose Jaw and spent lots of time here. And there's lots of great stories. So I really encourage if anybody is in for a little tour to come visit Moose Jaw and see the stories yourself and see what they've created, because it's pretty spectacular.
Okay, terrific. Now, you told me about something called Project Shine that you're very proud of. What is that?
The Project Shine is a key partnership that we created here at Moose Jaw Co-op, special to us. And we partnered with one of our crown corporations, which is South Water, and we both pledged $2,500 each. And then we do it as a till campaign so that we ask for member support at our tills, at our food store and our gas bar. Project Shine represents the sun. So our little logos are a sunshine to represent hope, standing for sustainability, unity, and nurturing. So we've chosen a different group each year. We've done this just for 2 years. It started to go 2 years, and it's really a great partnership, and it's raised lots of money for the two groups that we've supported so far, and has really great presence in our community, and very exciting.
And so what are the groups that are getting support from this project?
The right very now. First group that we did, the very first year we chose was for food insecurity, and it was called the Weekend Lunch Program. So they were making and are still making lunches with the funds on the weekends to those in need. And this past year, we supported the Moose Jaw Transition House, which is a women and children's shelter for fleeing and domestic violence, a safe house. So really great causes in our community. The need is definitely there for support. And we have chosen those charities just as, you know, what we feel is important for the timing of things and a great partner group to support.
And finally, there's support that was just announced for the Dolly Parton Imagination Library. When I saw that, I thought, wow, you guys are into early literacy as well. So tell us about that donation, $15,000 to the Moose Jaw Literacy Network and Moose Jaw Early Years. Mm-hmm. That's terrific. So tell me about that partnership.
We have a really great relationship with the Family Resource Center here in Moose Jaw, which is has all these sidebar groups, Moose Jaw Literacy being one of them. We have a project that we created with a Baby Love Project, where every newborn baby and mother gets a new box filled with trinkets and learning tools and things for Moose Jaw Co-op. We started that a couple years ago, and that really just started the relationship with us and the Family Resource Center, which is 0 to 5 as focus for children. And Moose Jaw Literacy started the Dolly Parton Foundation Literacy Partnership, but to continue it on so that more children can get access to these books, they need the funds. So we thought that was a really great thing. The program itself gives a newborn baby a book every month until they're the age of, I think, 5. So they get a book for many years every month to collect this whole library of books and encourage reading at a young age with their parents. And it's so important, because that really is our future. Yes. So we think it's very important to invest in the future and have these great relationships with Family Resource Center and the Moose Jaw Literacy group.
This is a tremendous initiative. I mean, kudos to Dolly Parton for all she does.
Isn't she great?
Yeah, to promote literacy and make books available. And what a treat for a child. and their family every month.
Every month to receive
a new book and have it be just for them. It's really exciting. So, Michaela, thanks so much for explaining just some of the incredible initiatives undertaken by your co-op in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan and surrounding area to strengthen the community, to build bonds, to energize and give hope, really. This is this is the best of what co-ops do. And
for sure.
It's just,
I have the best job in the world, don't I, Sandy? Aren't I?
Yeah, you
here?
Do. You're very really grateful. It's a fantastic job. And as you say, it's all about relationships. And we need each other, we need to support each other. And co-ops are really on the front line of helping and giving back, listening to what needs are, and trying to, you know, stem the gap between what people need and turning that into a reality. And that's hopeful in everything that you're doing. So thanks so much. We wish you all the best going forward. And yes,
Thank you, Sandy.
Take a trip to Moose Jaw and explore the Al Capone tunnels. That sounds really cool. Puts you on the map. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Take care.
Yeah.
Thanks so
much.
Thank
you, Sandy.
Okay. Bye for now.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
That was Michaela Turner, Manager of Community and Employee Engagement for the Moose Jaw Co-op in Saskatchewan. Let's take a quick break, then come back with more of Each for All, the Cooperative Connection.
100.5 means non-commercial, listener-powered, community radio. 100.5 means music, public affairs,
I have a dream,
and arts programming.
I wish I loved the human race. I wish I loved its city face.
You won't find anywhere else on the radio dial. 100.5 is not owned by a huge corporation. We are owned and operated by people like you, by your community. 100.5 CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Find our complete program schedule at coopradio.org.
Give me that.
It's mine.
I want it.
No, it's mine.
No, give it to me!
You have to give it back!
Stop! Instead of fighting, try working together. Honestly, openly, in a spirit of caring for others. And tune in to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. on CFRO 100.5 FM, on your dial and online at cooperadio.org. Try cooperating. You'll feel better for it.
And we're back. You're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection, proudly broadcasting on Vancouver Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, and online at cooperadio.org. In Alberta, co-ops are supporting young people to join 4-H through the Co-op Growing Leaders Program. Jordan Pryor spent most of her youth in 4-H. Now, she's the Agriculture and Energy Marketing Specialist at South Country Co-op in Medicine Hat. I began our interview by asking how co-ops and 4-H got together. Have a listen.
So this program spontaneously came to be. It was just an idea, and it came post-COVID. So I started as the marketing manager at Cornerstone Co-op, and I had this very healthy budget with 4-H. And as a 4-H member, I was getting, or as a manager at the time, I was getting phone calls. Clubs that were like, hey, we're closing the club, like we have no kids interested, we have limited members for our achievement day just because it's hard getting kids involved. And so I was like, hey, how can I get more local kids involved into this program? And I was like, I know that registration fees were super expensive sometimes, especially if you have three kids going in from one family into a club, it adds up. And so I was like, I'm just going to start sponsoring their registration fees, see how it goes, see if it's helpful, and if we can try and increase those numbers in our local communities. And what happened is it was just an idea. We put the marketing out on social media. It blew up. We got a phone call from 4-H Alberta, and they were like, hey, this program's amazing. We want to partner with you on it and help you like promote it even more. And what was starting to happen is in that first year, we sponsored 73 new kids. Wow. Which is so amazing. I had clubs that had 8 new kids for one small, tiny community of 400 people. Like, that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And so going into year 2, I was like, oh my gosh, I want to make this project bigger and better and get other co-ops within Alberta involved. So we did a call out, and FCL helped us. And we had four other co-ops involved, and we sponsored just over 200 kids throughout different training areas in Alberta. And now this year is year number three. And we have 13 local co-ops that have joined this vision, and we're currently at over 110 new kids. And please keep in mind, we launched the program a few weeks ago, and it's open until December 15th. But for South Country, this is their first year in the program, first time hearing about it, and we have over 60 kids registered so far.
That's amazing. That's really incredible. You know, you mentioned the fees. Let's say a family of three has kids at different ages going into, what is the cost to join 4-H to register? Let's say I've got a 7-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 14-year-old.
Yeah, there's different levels. You have your club level, your district, your regional, and your provincial level.
But let's say roughly a family with three kids wants to send them, you know, give me a ballpark. Is it $1,000 to send three kids? Is it $500?
$600 for three kids.
And what is the FCL, the Co-op Growing Leaders Program, going to do for this family? How will it reduce their cost?
So what we're doing is we're sponsoring up to $200 per new member that registers, just because there is fluctuation and difference in registration fees. So they have a maximum of $200 that first year. And people or co-op associations that were formally involved in the last year's program were actually sponsoring up to $100 for second year members to hopefully increase consistency and longevity within that 4-H program.
That's terrific. That's really going to help families and help their kids, right, to be involved in an amazing program. You know, the children and grandchildren and maybe great-grandchildren and, you know, very diverse community. But largely based around agriculture of different kinds. It sounds really exciting. And the reason that I was reaching out to you is because of a program called the Co-op Growing Leaders Program. And this really caught my eye because the co-ops are supporting, South Country and others in Alberta are supporting young people with funds to join 4-H. I'm sure a lot of our listeners do not know about 4-H. It's an international program in over 70 countries in the world, and it's designed to help develop leadership skills in youth and build community and resilient young people to lead us through the future. And you are a graduate of 4-H, and you were raised on 4-H. You were involved for 14 years. So give us the scoop on 4-H. What does it do for young people? Why are co-ops sponsoring young people to join 4-H?
I think you said it perfectly, Sandy. Like that the program is so amazing, and it definitely helps youth with skills such as cooperation, leadership, critical thinking, decision making, public speaking, and community service. And it encompasses everything from agriculture to arts to science, technology, and the kids just learn so much. And there's so many opportunities when it comes to workshops, camps, putting themselves out there out of that comfort zone, meeting new people. I know for myself, even in the career path that I'm going down right now, 4-H has been so vital in helping me grow as a leader and with the connections that I've made over the last 15 years, for sure. So I'm super grateful, and I know this program is so, so, so amazing.
So how old were you when you started 4-H?
I was 9, and at the time, you could only join 4-H as a 9-year-old, whereas now they have the whole Cleaver program where you can join at 7-8. Which is absolutely amazing. And they can take in their little projects. I know for B4-H, they can take in a little calf and they parade it around the ring. They do showmanship, grooming, the whole shebang. But
So wait, if a child beginning at age 7 wants to become involved in 4-H, like sort of how does it scaffold, or how does the child grow through the program over the years? Like, what's it like when you're a little one and you talk about projects? Educate us, because we're novices in 4-H. At least I am. Now, my dad was a graduate of the Ontario Agricultural College in Guelph, in 1946. So that's pretty wonderful. And, you know, we have family members on the farm, and those are some of my roots. But what's it like for 4-H kids today?
That is such a great question. I think when you're joining as a younger member, you're just so intrigued by what could be in the possibilities. And even if you have the ability or the opportunity to go into an animal, like an agricultural 4-H project, the excitement to have to take care of an animal and have responsibility, that sort of thing is really exciting. And I know for myself, I remember being in grade 4, and at the time, there's certain clubs that still do this. They have their senior members go into schools and pitch to the grade 3s and grade 4s about what the 4-H program is. And I can still remember that senior member coming into my classroom, telling me all about the 4-H program, how amazing it was. And I got off the school bus and I was so excited. And I went and told my dad, I was like, "Dad, I'm going in 4-H. And he was just like, "Oh, okay." Cause he had grown up with the 4-H community as well. He was a leader growing up. So I think when you're young, you're so excited for that opportunity. And as you grow from a junior member to an intermediate to a senior, you have so many opportunities, like I said, of going to camp, learning different responsibilities as part of the 4-H program. You're kind of expected, you know, you have a committee where you vote, you do motions, you have record books, you have to be very organized, you learn all these sorts of skills, and you have the opportunity to be the secretary, the vice president, the president of the club. And eventually, as you grow and age in that program, you get to help with the next generation of members.
But let's say I'm an urban kid, but yeah. I like the idea of being involved because, well, my parents want to keep me out of trouble. They want me to stop looking at my phone and the computer. They want me to learn to relate to other people and build some social skills and become a little bit more responsible. But my interests are different. I don't live on a farm. What has 4-H got to offer me?
Honestly, the sky's the limit. I know 4-H is becoming more diverse in what they're able to offer, because back in the day it was based around those livestock projects for sure, and it's evolved into those multi-clubs. So depending on what an urban youth might be interested in, they can do anything from, let's say, hamster, maybe they're into that technology piece. So they could look into with their local specialist what is available. 4-H, they could do canine 4-H.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they're into photography or yes, digital absolutely. Photography or filmmaking.
Yes, yes.
So the idea is that you take on a project and you nurture it over the course of a year or maybe a few years, and you're sharing that with others. How are we learning to relate to other people in 4-H? Because that's one of the strengths. You pledge your heart to greater loyalty. That's relating and caring. How does that piece fit in? Because that's so important today, as we see a lot of anger out there, a lot of people not being able to solve problems peacefully.
Yeah, I think the big thing about 4-H too is that you're part of a large scale community that teaches those skills for sure, and teaches cohesion, relationship building, like I said, critical thinking, which isn't offered a lot all the time either for sure in this day and age, which is why this program is so important, to bring youth back into an environment like that. Especially as your urban centers get larger and your rural communities get smaller, the opportunity to get out and about, and because not everybody can afford sports nowadays either. They're very expensive. You're commuting all over the province. The games aren't as local anymore. So a program like 4-H is way more accessible. It's way more affordable. And it teaches so many different life skills. That's what makes it so great.
One of the things you commented on was that 4-H challenges young people in public speaking. This is very interesting, and I can see it building a lot of strength because as a classroom teacher, we always gave kids an opportunity to speak about their projects, their work, to share, to present. And in fact, they used to get a grade in speaking as part of their language arts. And so, you know, kids would be nervous, but we would support them and give them feedback. And it helped strengthen them, build some, you know, resilience. And they felt really good about themselves after they were able to do that. Interesting. How did 4-H help you with public speaking? Because you're out there speaking to the public all the time in your job.
When you're a junior member going into 4-H, everybody hates public speaking. It's very rare to actually like it. And so you're kind of like forced out of your comfort zone, like I said earlier, to do this, build that speech. Hopefully mom and dad help the kids go through their speech. I know we had to practice with the microwave timer growing up and we hated it as a junior member, but as you grow into the intermediate senior, it gets easier and easier. And then eventually once you go to university and college and you graduate and get into a career, you're actually so thankful and grateful for those opportunities that pushed you outside of your comfort zone. And I know even going, when I was in university, part of our classes, like you had said too, was public speaking. That was one of the classes that you had to take. And most kids left that class to the end of their 4-year degree because they were so scared and paranoid to have to do that class. And I just went in and took it like first year, just
right
like,
on. All right, let's 4-H. Way to go, 4-H. Alberta co-ops are also focused on the mental health of community members, especially farmers. Here's Jordan to explain.
I think nowadays with all the technology that we have, you're more connected than ever, but you're also more disconnected than ever. We're not having those in-person conversations anymore. We're attached to our digital devices, unfortunately. And so I think more and more we're ending the stigma and we're trying to talk about it, especially within agriculture, because, you know, you have in the past, you had those old farmers that would never talk about it. They don't want to talk about their feelings or what's going on inside. And so it's definitely becoming more of a conversation piece and talking about it for sure. And like you said, like there's so many environmental factors, market fluctuations in markets thing. And so we started Communities in Mind, not necessarily with the ag audience in mind first. It's kind of graduated to that piece. But just because mental health in general post-COVID was taking a turn for everyone. Everyone was struggling working from home, then trying to come back into their offices. I know even everybody within our co-op association, it was just a piece that even our managers and our team, we are trying to talk about more internally as well. So what we did is we partnered with the Mental Health Association out of Alberta because we wanted to have that check and balance, because mental health is not tangible and it's not really something that you can measure. And so we wanted somebody that could do that for us. And we started raising funds through this heart campaign. So we printed these paper hearts and we asked customers to come in, pay minimum $1 to put their name or a message on these hearts. And we would post them on the walls or windows to showcase how much money was being raised for local mental health programs and initiatives. And that program really blew up as well. So it started with Cornerstone. We raised $20,000 the first year. Then we asked more co-ops to join on board as well. And it grew over the years, the last 3 years. We raised over $150,000. And what happens is, depending on what community, for example, if the funds are raised in Vermilion, Alberta, those funds are going to stay within the Vermilion, Dewberry, Manville communities. And that's for all, like, province-wide. And then what happens is a local group or coalition or even an individual can apply to their AHS facilitator. The AHS facilitator is that balance, that check and balance, and helps them with their application. And then the Mental Health Association decides if they're eligible for funding or not. And keep in mind, because it is such a serious topic, these applications are a bit lengthy just to ensure that the money is going to the appropriate people and creating the greatest impact. And so what we've heard because the Mental Health Association is based out of Edmonton, is this funding has been so key and so vital in creating new programs throughout Alberta and really helping build momentum on existing programs too. And so you have things like a mental health library that was formed in St. Paul. You have fidget tools for kids in school that might be getting bullied, or card games that help with their mental health that they can participate in during recess, or Move Your Mood is a program that's for moms that have just had babies and just need to get out of the house and move their body, and they can bring their babes with them. So those are just some of the programs that are available. And then, yeah, you have this piece farmers that we're trying to work on too. And farmers, because their lives are so chaotic and hectic, we would like to start sponsoring, like maybe it's 7 therapy sessions that they have access to, that they can just like, hey, I'm struggling, I need to talk to someone, I'm gonna go into my local community. And so being able to cover those costs for them is kind of what we've been thinking of doing.
So these are more and more examples of how co-ops give back to the community, you know, target or zero in on what's going on in the local community, what the needs are. You know, you see it every day because you're interacting with customers, be it at the retail sector, the gas bar, you know, the ag and feed or fertilizer center. I mean, it's about people, and you've said that it's about relating to people. And, you know, you've identified a couple of areas. I mean, mental health for all ages and supporting young people to get involved in 4-H, because after all, you know, in supporting young people, as I've said earlier, they're the future generation. You know, 4-H is so highly acclaimed. And just a wonderful way to participate, and at a cost that, you know, is reasonable compared to, as you say, organized sports or other things. And over, we just hear about all these co-ops just giving back in all kinds of ways, raising money for, you know, school food programs, or, you know, it just goes on and on. So, Jordan, thanks so much for spending time with us on Each for All today, talking about what's going on in your part of Alberta and the Cornerstone area as well, to support people in your communities. That's what it's all about. And we're really thrilled that you're doing this work, and keep on doing this work for the people in your province. Thanks so much for being with us today, and take good care.
Thanks so much, Sandy.
That was Jordan Pryor, Agriculture and Energy Marketing Specialist with South Country Co-op in Medicine Hat, Alberta. Edie Kiefer and her mom, Christine, are a 4-H family on Galliano Island in British Columbia. Edie is 11 and joined 4-H when she was 8. While they don't benefit from the Co-op Growing Leaders Program living in BC, I thought it would be great to learn what 4-H adds to their lives. I began by asking Edie why she wanted to participate in 4-H. Have a listen.
I love chickens. I've loved chickens since I was around 5, and I thought it would be really cool to go somewhere where I could learn more and learn how to take care of them better and meet other people who are crazy about chickens and birds.
And so why was 4-H the place to go?
It was close to where we lived, so we could get there easily. My friend was at the time in Clover Buds, and that's where I started. And I thought the making ed boards and taking our chickens to the shows would be really fun.
So you're on Galliano Island. Is there a 4-H club right on the island there?
No, there isn't. There's one in Saanich. So it's pretty easy to get to for us. And it's like once a month, there's a meeting.
Okay.
There's also on Salt Spring, but it was more complicated to get there.
Okay. So you've been a chicken gal for a number of years now. Is that your main project? I learned from my former interview that 4-H participants have projects.
Yes, we do. So there's different categories, so you can go into the horse club, bunny club, poultry club, all different types of clubs. And since I love chickens, I went into the chicken club. So we do different projects. Like every year we do an ed board.
Tell us what an ed board is, because we're all just learning about 4-H. What does that mean?
Ed board is an educational display. And for my ed board, I did how I taught my dog to find me. So that, how that would show up on the board would be, there would be pictures. I would have a paragraph of how I taught him, what we're going to do next, how old he was, more about him. And that would all be on a board with photos of him finding me and different things like that.
So how did you teach him to find you? That's a great project, because you guys have a number of dogs. Was this your dog, Ben?
Yes.
So tell us how you taught him that.
Well, I thought it would be really cool to try. So we started by, my mom would hold him and I would run into the forest quite far away, and then she would say, find her, and then I would say the same thing. And then he would be wanting to know where I was, so he'd follow my voice. And then slowly we just did it where my mom just said, find her, and he would go run into the forest and find me.
That's amazing. So he's a pretty smart dog, and you are a great trainer. So you took all that information and made a display.
Yes.
Terrific. What other kind of projects have you done? I know there's a lot of record keeping in 4-H, right? That's part of what they're teaching you, to kind of tell us about that, because that's hard work.
Yes, it is. So at the start of the year 4-H, you get a book in a binder, and it's your record book. So you put in pictures of your chickens, like how they grew, so pictures of them when they're a baby until they're full-sized, and then when they're eggs. And health, you put their health and veterinary record in, and their feed information, and total feed and expenses, things like that, all into a book. And then at the end of the year, you're judged for your book. And we also have a field day. So field day, you get to bring your bird, and you learn how to judge your bird. And you learn how to, I think this is field day, judge other animals. So one of the things at our meetings is, after a meeting, we have like a game or something to do. So sometimes our coach or our leader will bring in her coachins. And then
what's a cochin?
A cochin is a really fluffy chicken, and they're not like silkies, so they do have feathers, but they're just very big and fluffy.
Furry feet.
Big feathery feet and fluffy faces, and they're really cute. They're like big teddy bears. For my 4-H birds, I started with two birds, which I was supposed to get a trio, but we didn't exactly figure that out till we had two birds. So I have Queen and Quince. They're still around, and they're my friendliest hens. They are SSL Browns, and they have very, very pretty feathers. They're just like a barnyard hen, but they're really good at taking care of their feathers, and they lay big brown eggs, and they have the sweetest personalities. They will come and sit on your shoulder if you'd like. They're really sweet. And this year we got three cochins, actually. One of them is a rooster. His name is Jingle. And then Belle and Holly, we thought we were getting all black, but we got one splash, so like multicolored. One black one and one blue one. So we didn't exactly, we lost a few points for our trio not matching. And our rooster being a foreign color, because apparently he was not splash, which wasn't great. But there, our rooster, he's really sweet. He's very big and he's calm, so you can pick him up and turn him onto his tummy and pet his tummy, and he'll just fall asleep.
This is fantastic. Now, Christine, Mom Christine, what's it like being a parent of a 4-H participant?
It's It's extremely educational. When we started this program, I knew nothing about chickens. And we have 10 chickens right now, but we've had up to 18. We are probably not the norm because since we've started 4-H, we now don't eat chicken. Okay. They've become our pets. We did have a blind chicken which lived in our house part-time because, you know, she had trouble finding food and the other chickens weren't that nice to her. Try going on internet and finding out how to care for a blind chicken. There's not much out there. So we kind of had to feel our way through that with Red. And we have a chicken in the house right now who's got an abscess in her eye. She just went to the vet yesterday and had surgery. And
oh my goodness.
So we get pretty involved.
Yeah. Her name is Rosie. Yeah. She's the sweetest hen.
She's pretty sweet. We learned all about what you should feed them, what you shouldn't. You know, we learned about mites and lice and all sorts of good things. And
worms
and raccoons and rats and
mink.
And, you know, keeping your chicken run biosecure. And so it's been, you know, really wonderful for Edie to learn all of this at such a young age.
When you go over to Saanich, do you take the chickens with you?
We do on field days and judging days, but not usually. We just go with ourselves.
Yeah, we normally just travel with them for shows. So yeah. In the summertime, you know, these kids start raising their chickens in the spring. We started as early as Christmas Eve one year, which is why our chickens were called Belle, Holly, and Jingle.
Right.
But then you do the show circuit, which is all the fairs in Saanich up in...
The Saanich one's 3 days long.
Yeah,
in Saanich, wow.
Cumberland, Cowichan, Salt Spring.
And all different. Cobble Hill.
Cobble Hill, yeah.
I went to that one this year with my birds.
Edie, what are the other kids like? Do you enjoy being with them because you have things in common? Or are you learning, you know, are you making new friends? How does it feel? And is it a welcoming place for people?
It is really welcoming. I find it hard to make friends, but it's nice knowing people who know a lot about chickens and can tell me about their flocks. And we went to see one of their farms, and we saw their chickens, and they had a parrot chick, which was pretty cool, but not a parrot chick, a chicken that was called a parrot chick because it was a bit deformed and interesting.
When Edie first started going to 4-H, Edie doesn't love school. She just isn't really into school. And we were introduced to 4-H from one of her friends at school, and her mom is a teacher. And we got to the first meeting, and they kind of described what was going to happen. And there was about 30, 40 kids in there. And they said, now, who wants to tell us about their birds? And Edie, who doesn't really participate in school that much, was the first person to raise her hand.
Right on.
And she talked all night and was the first person to raise her hand for everything. And me and her teacher were just like, oh my God, Edie has arrived. This is her tribe.
Yeah.
And you could just see, like, this is a room of like-minded people who could talk for hours. And the other thing they do is give speeches.
Right. I was going to ask about that because Jordan Pryor, who we spoke to earlier from South Country Co-op in Medicine Hat, told us that she started 4-H when she was in grade 4, and the public speaking part was, you know, something that's quite challenging, but yet she found that it helped her become more confident, and she uses her speaking skills in her work now with South Country Co-op. So Edie, tell us about the public speaking part and what you've found doing that about yourself?
I found out that I do not like public speaking very much, but it did help me with being more confident. I did a speech once instead of an ed board, or I did an ed board and a speech, and it was really fun.
And people laughed, and she was a natural. And, you know, I didn't learn to public speak until I went to university.
Right.
She's like ticking this off her list is going to be so great for her at this age.
You know, Edie, you're only going to get stronger and more confident doing that. And it's an important skill. You mentioned about joining a different club next year. Tell us what your goals are in 4-H going forward.
So I'm going to go into the horse 4-H since I ride horses, and I know a lot about chickens now that I want to learn about something else. And I think my goal would be to learn more about horses so that one day I can own a horse of my own and be and know and understand how they eat and all that type of thing.
Terrific. Now, do you have a horse there at your place on Galliano? No. Not yet.
Not yet. We only have 3 dogs, 2 chickens, no, 2 bunnies, 10 chickens, and 8 llamas.
And soon or to alpacas, be alpacas and a few geese, and soon to be a gosling.
Listen, there's always room for more at your place. So I get a feeling a horse will be arriving soon. Last question to you, Mom. In Alberta, the co-op sector is supporting people to join 4-H with some financial help for registration. That isn't the case in British Columbia. How do you find the costs of this program going forward?
I think that, you know, if we lived in Vixanage, the cost would be, you know, more reasonable. For us, it's a little more logistically challenging. You know, I think the application fee was maybe just under $100 or something. But, you know, I'm sure that's not accessible to everybody. So I think that's wonderful that someone is doing that. You know, in the poultry club, it's getting more and more expensive to not only feed us, but feed your animals. So I think any little bit of help that a 4-H member could get is wonderful.
And last question, Edie, to you. If you meet a young person, same age as you, and they ask you about going into 4-H, they say, "Well, I'm thinking about it, but I'm not sure." What would you tell someone who's hoping to go but not sure? And what would you tell them about 4-H?
I would tell them that it's really fun and really educational, and it's really interesting and cool, and it's really good for your self-confidence, but it is a commitment, and you need to be ready to make that commitment.
Fabulous. Edie and Christine, it's so great to spend time with you there on Galliano and hear all about your work with 4-H and how you've grown over the years. You've learned so much about poultry and taking on a new venture with Horse 4-H going forward, and a very supportive family with you, Edie, and all the critters there. It's really great for us to learn about 4-H firsthand from a young person involved and a caring parent. So thanks so much for being with us on Each for All today. And we wish you all the best going forward. Take care.
Thanks so much, Sandy.
That was Edie Kiefer and her mom, Christine, a 4-H family on Galliano Island in British Columbia. Thanks for sharing what being part of 4-H brings to your lives. And that's it for this edition of Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. Thanks to my fellow cooperator, Joshua Peterman, for putting all the pieces together. I'm Sandy Goldman. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and have a cooperative week.